And now to what could be the most substantial challenge to Roe v. Wade in decades. A case brought by Mississippi is attempting to overturn the landmark 1973 ruling. According to the Guttmacher Institute, 26 states, including Wisconsin, are certain or likely to ban abortion if the Supreme Court overturns or guts Roe. So what questions do you have about the oral arguments in the Mississippi case, precedents, justices telegraphing how the court may rule? It's 800-642-1234. Mary Ziegler is a professor at Florida State University College of Law and a leading authority on the legal history of abortion in America. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first explain to us what is at stake here in this Mississippi case. Why is Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization at the crux of policy in America?
Well, the case obviously is about a specific law, as all Supreme Court cases are. This one is about a Mississippi law that bans abortion at 15 weeks, which is the point the state says fetal pain is possible. But it's, of course, about much more than that as well. And that's because in order to uphold the Mississippi law, the court either has to say that there's a new line at which states can ban abortion, or say there is no right to abortion at all. And that's because at the moment, the right to choose abortion applies until viability, which is usually around the 24th week. So if Mississippi's law is acceptable, that's either because Roe v. Wade drew the wrong line or because there is no right to choose abortion. And based on the oral arguments, it seems as if the court may be heading towards saying there is no right to choose abortion at all.
And you have been reflecting for years on what the court might do for Roe v. Wade. And we had always talked about how you saw the court chipping away at Roe and not going at it full throttle. Do you feel like there is a sea change here?
I do. I mean, I think that the court sounds ready to undo Wade entirely based on some of the questions that were being asked, based on who's on the court and why they were chosen. I think there's no way coming out of this summer abortion rights in the United States will be the same. And it's quite likely that in places like Wisconsin, there will be no legal abortion or very few legal abortions at all.
Okay, so, and you're saying this summer because you would expect a decision coming out in the June-ish, early July timeframe?
Yeah, correct. So, obviously, you know, we don't ever entirely know the timing of the court's decisions, but absent some kind of, you know, like expedited timeframe, which we don't really expect in this case, we would expect some kind of decision by late spring or early summer of 2022.
So looking at Wisconsin, a 172-year-old law could go back into effect if Roe is overturned. It would make providing abortions a felony. And if Roe is fully overturned, how could that play out in states like Wisconsin, where abortions would become totally illegal under state law?
Well, I mean, one of the other things to emphasize is that in places like Wisconsin, it's not just a function of what's going on in your state. It'd be a function of what's going on in your region. So the 26 states that would likely or certainly ban abortion are concentrated in the South and the Midwest, which would mean that people in Wisconsin who wanted to get legal abortions would, you know, potentially, most likely, in the case of Wisconsin, the closest states would probably be Minnesota and Illinois. So you would be looking at either travel out of state or trying to get some kind of abortion medication if you're seeking an abortion. Obviously, that might be illegal, right? So we don't know how states would approach actually prosecuting people for performing abortions or seeking abortions, but those are the kinds of questions people in Wisconsin would be having to ask. And of course, travel out of state is, you know, not easy for everyone, depending on the resources they have. And we don't know legally how Wisconsin is going to react to people traveling out of state for procedures that would be considered illegal in state.
And I was reading yesterday, California said it would become a sanctuary state providing abortion rights. And so you really are starting to see states really staking their claim as to what they would do.
Right. Yeah, well, and I think, you know, we're likely to see more of that, in part because blue states like California are going to, I think, more often try to make themselves places where people can get legal abortions, potentially even legally funded abortions, which is part of the proposed plan in California. And that's likely to create even more legal showdowns because, of course, states like Wisconsin are probably not going to want that to happen or want people to be able to travel out of state. So there'll be battles about whose laws apply, which courts get to decide when states are taking different positions about the legality of a specific act, right? So somebody travels from out of state, who gets to decide whether that's okay?
Mm-hmm. Roe was decided in the year I was born. It was, of course, a different era, close to the passage of the 1960s civil rights laws. This case really would make us rethink how political and moral authority interacts between the federal government and the states. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, I think it's also worth emphasizing that it wouldn't necessarily end in the states, right? This is not a situation where, for example, you know, Wisconsin Right to Life or other groups in Wisconsin that are pro-life or anti-abortion, they're not going to want to stop with states being able to decide. They're likely going to want the Supreme Court to declare abortion unconstitutional everywhere. The reason for that is that, of course, if you're in the Right to Life movement, you believe that a fetus or unborn person is a rights-holding person, and that abortion is unconstitutional, you know, in California, too. So we're likely to see the balance between federal and state power rejiggered again, not just a scenario where abortion stays with the states, and that's where we leave things.
What is the ripple effect here? What would happen to birth control or IVF, sexual liberty? What other constitutional rights may be vulnerable?
Well, the most straightforward questions would be about actual birth control. Certain kinds of birth control would probably fall under the heading of abortion, right? So if you remember back to fights about the Obamacare contraceptive mandate, there were lots of what many people consider contraceptives, like IUDs or emergency contraception, that some folks were regarded as abortion-inducing drugs. So the most straightforward outcome would be that some states would treat contraceptives as abortion without, you know, even having a conflict about contraception per se. The other thing I don't think it's as likely we'll see the Supreme Court overrule decisions on contraception per se. I think that's, again, more likely to fall under the heading of abortion. I think more likely we'll see questions raised about LGBTIQ cases, so same-sex marriage, bans on sodomy. We've already seen some conservatives suggesting that those decisions should be revisited. And that's, I think, more likely where we would go rather than decisions on contraception, even though I think contraceptive access will be affected.
Mary Ziegler with us, professor at Florida State University College of Law, written 3 books on abortion history and law. Have you been watching the Mississippi case? What do you think would be the ripple effect on Wisconsin law and state politics? What do you want to ask the historian? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mary Ziegler on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. After hours of public debate last week, the U.S. Supreme Court meets in private to debate whether to uphold Mississippi's ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Supreme Court watchers, they say the decision in the abortion case is not expected until summer when major rulings tend to arrive. What questions do you have about access to abortion if Roe is overruled? 800-642-1234. We have Florida State Law Professor Mary Ziegler with us, wrote the book on abortion law from Roe to present day with us for about 10 more minutes. Mary, with your historical lens cap on, if you will, looking at the ebb and flow of protections of Roe over the decades, how have you seen protections strengthen or weaken within the last few decades?
Well, obviously, in the past decade or so, we've seen a much more vigorous challenge to abortion rights. You would even really say that that's intensified in the years since Donald Trump transformed the Supreme Court, because really, I think up until then, there was a sense in which both pro-choice and pro-life forces were sort of catering to the median voters. So certainly abortion opponents were trying to restrict abortion, supporters of abortion rights were trying to expand access, but everyone was sort of working within limits set by popular attitudes. I think since the Supreme Court has changed, there's a real sense that the anti-abortion or pro-life movement is asking for what it really wants, not necessarily asking for things the public enjoys. So you see, for example, the falling away of things like exceptions for rape and incest, which are quite popular, but not reflective of what the movement wants. Hmm. So in recent years, I think you've seen a fundamental shift in the way the politics work toward, I think, more purist positions, if you will, and probably in the case of places like Wisconsin, more sweeping bans.
What about the perception of viability and the viability line? Roe said states couldn't ban abortions before fetal viability. You mentioned that earlier about the Mississippi law moving that viability line to 15 weeks. We saw Chief Justice John Roberts suggesting that the court might be able to move the viability line without overruling Roe. So how does that factor into this case?
Yeah, so the Chief Justice was clearly, reaching out for what would sort of pass as some kind of middle ground outcome. I think one thing to emphasize is that overruling the viability line would not be like a small thing, right? So it's not a compromise in the sort of classic sense of something that really wouldn't be a big deal. But I think the Chief Justice didn't want to overrule Roe right away. And how that would work would really depend, but the idea, I think, would be to say, viability has never really made sense as a line because it changes depending on technology, because, whatever one thinks of the value of fetal life, it doesn't really or shouldn't hinge on how dependent it is on somebody else, all of those kinds of arguments. But then the court would leave for another day whether there's a right to choose abortion. That was what I expected the court to do before I heard the oral argument. But during the oral argument, most of the other conservative justices didn't really seem that interested in the Chief Justice's line of questioning, with maybe the exception of Amy Coney Barrett, who did pick up that line of questioning toward the end of the argument. But for the most part, it seemed as if the Chief Justice was sort of alone in trying to forge some sort of middle ground outcome, and the other conservative justices seemed much more interested in revisiting Roe v. Wade as a whole.
What did you hear out of Justice Elena Kagan? There was one line, there's been 50 years of water under the bridge. Where did Elena Kagan fall on this?
Well, Justice Kagan, I think, was quite quiet for her and seemed to be, it's unclear if she was resigned or if she was being strategic, but she did seem to suggest that it was kind of remarkable and also odd that the court was revisiting a precedent like Roe that was so venerable, particularly when there didn't really seem to be an urgent reason to do so. This was not a scenario, for example, where there had been a split in the lower courts as to what to do, and the Supreme Court really had to intervene to shed clarity on the situation. This was a situation where the Supreme Court had sort of picked this up on its own initiative, and I think you saw Justice Kagan kind of questioning why exactly that was.
Justice Sonia Sotomayor expressed this viewpoint during last Wednesday's hearing.
Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
What did you make of those words?
Well, I think Justice Sotomayor, like most of actually her liberal colleagues, was not focused on the best, constitutional arguments for an abortion right existing. And I don't think that's because Justice Sotomayor doesn't think there is such an argument. I think she was speaking to her target audience, which is conservative justices. She thinks probably don't agree with her on that point. But I think she was emphasizing not only that Roe was a precedent, but of course that we would be seeing the court entirely undo a precedent that's highly politicized simply because the court's membership had changed. And her concern, I think, was that the court's popularity has already gone down. Perceptions that the court is partisan have already gone up. And if the court delivers an outcome, of course, that Donald Trump promised on the campaign trail, he promised that his justices would reverse Roe as soon as they got the chance, is the court going to be able to convince the American public that it's not a partisan institution anymore? I think that's your concern.
We're talking with Mary Ziegler, who is a professor at Florida State University. Most recent book is called Abortion and the Law in America. You can join in with your thoughts on those oral arguments last week, 800-642-1234. Mary, as you look at public perception and the Pew Research Center saying 6 in 10 Americans believe abortion should be legal in all or most cases, how much does public opinion align with what the court is debating?
Well, I mean, the court doesn't seem concerned about popular opinion, and usually that's fairly unusual. I mean, historians would tell you that most of the time, the court's decisions don't stray too far from what majority opinion would dictate. But if the court does overrule Roe, especially overrule Roe in one fell swoop with no kind of buildup or explanation, I think that would be a departure from popular opinion, especially because what the court would be ushering in is not, you know, bans at 15 weeks. It would be laws like Wisconsin's pre-Roe law, which ban many, many, many more abortions than that, if not all abortions. So this is an instance, I think, in which we may be seeing this current Supreme Court essentially signaling that it's not concerned about public reaction to its decisions. And of course, that could tell you that the court may not stop with something like overruling abortion if that kind of consideration doesn't come into play. Other dramatic rulings could be in store.
Mississippi, not the only one in the last few moments. Texas as well. How likely are other states to follow suit here? Texas law banning abortion once cardiac activity detected in the embryo.
Very likely. I mean, I think the 26 states that we mentioned, I don't think that's where we're going to stop. I think that's the starting point. I think we're quite likely to see more states than that ban abortions. So, I, and as I mentioned, I don't think it necessarily will stop with what we conventionally think of as abortions. So, you know, this is going to be a very different era, I think, when it comes to abortion and other reproductive services in America.
Mary, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mary Ziegler is a professor at Florida State University. Latest book called Abortion and the Law in America. Just ahead, we talk about Indigenous rights and intimate partner violence. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.